This show, I know ahead of time, is going to stand out amongst shows. I know it will. I have two Liz's, first off. I mean, first off, when do you ever get an extra Liz? So I have Liz Larson, who is a Broadway actress. Our friend and the voice of the show, Tim Kitzrow, found us Liz Larson and said, Liz, do this for me and I'll owe you for the rest of my life, because there's no other reason why she should have said yes to us. I have Liz Lathan and Nicole Achibodu. She'll fix me later, who run a really wonderful company that we're going to learn about things like secret family reunions. We're going to learn about secret meetings, lots of secrets. And I'm scared to death because they asked me a weird question about my grandmother before the show even started. Now, listen, the show, as always, is just like Fight Club. If you don't say hi, I don't know you're here. So Space Spear says, sup. Hi, Space Spear. I think it's weird that you've turned into a regular viewer after just hating me for being on all those StreamYard commercials. But, you know, I'll take it. I'll take the audience where I can get it. Liz Larson, pay attention. You might see a couple of your Broadway people in this intro.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
We had Jesse Hooker Bailey on, who was in the show Waitress, and who's leading the charge for helping to get a lot more diversity and people of color into front roles, not just chorus roles, all over the Broadways. So look who's shown up. There's my biological father, one Steve Brogan, my Grammy's son, by the way, I should point out, to Liz Lathan, who I'm still suspicious of, Coach Woodard up in Maine. I have Leslie, who I went to school with from sixth grade on for a little bit. This is kind of a show today. We got everybody here. So I'm going to grab my Broadway actress, Liz Larson, first, and we're going to ask her some questions. But we're going to learn about Hot Dokimazo next. Oh, I needed to drink before this episode. All I got is iced coffee. Liz Larson, I'm dragging you in. Ready? Hi, how the heck are you?
Hi. Good morning.
You know, you said yes. I mean, that's what I got to start with here, you know.
See, my ring light is still in the shot. This is just embarrassing. Okay, how's that?
It's going to get you. You know what? Hang on a minute. Look, who left that fizzy water back there? That's terrible. There you go. I'll be like you. I'll clean it up.
Okay? I appreciate it.
There's a three-quarters drank Tabasco bottle, and it's tipped over. Who makes these sets? There we go. Now they won't even think about your ring light. How do you decide you're going to be a Broadway person? Because that's a lot of work. That's not the same as you did some, you know, community theater and all that sort of a thing. What makes you get to that part where you decide that's going to be the career? I mean, obviously you need the talent to get there, but there's a crap ton of work to do what you've chosen.
Well, my mother was the press agent for a place called the Bucks County Playhouse when I was a little girl. And anytime they needed a kid in a show, I was there. She just shoved me out there. So I worked with a lot of people that were on their way to Broadway and people that were leaving Broadway. And I also did this, I know it sounds ridiculous, this little children's theater group, but we were really serious. It was run by Marilyn Gerald, who was married to Arthur Gerald, who used to run the Brooks Van Horn costume industry in New York City. So we got all these Broadway costumes in this little backyard play that we did. But we rehearsed every day after school from 3:30 to 6, even when we were little, like 6 and 7 years old, and every weekend. And the work ethic that I learned from her and from the people that I worked with at the Playhouse was valuable. So, you know, someone said, when you want to be an actor, always be the hardest working person in the room. And I did that. And I still do that. It's just a
mindset. You took them up on it. Yep. You took them up on it. So one of the things we were talking about is that amongst roles that you've played fairly recently, and there's been so many, you played Carole King's mom, Jeannie, yeah, for 6 years on and off in Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Can you talk us through a little bit about that? What's that like? And especially kind of running for that long a time and everything.
Well, I've done long runs before, but never this long. And what happens is once you're on stage and saying the same words over and over, sometimes it gets to be where, like, what is that word? Why did I say that word? That doesn't make sense. What's the word? Why am I saying that word? So you start to blank and get weird after a while, which is a lot of the reason why I would leave and do other shows and come back because you get a little kooky doing the same exact thing every single.
There's
night.
A term for that. There's an insider term for that. I forget. That's when you've just blocked it. There's just nothing coming out. You've forgotten.
Blank.
It.
Blank.
Blank.
Yeah, blank. Yeah,
I learned all these things briefly and then immediately forgot them again. I watched our Hamilton man, Lin-Manuel Miranda, tell like GQ all of the insider scoop on the language that people use in plays and Broadway and all that sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. It is a whole other world, isn't it? It is a completely different thing than people who go off and do theater and all that. Movies, film and all that sort of thing. I didn't do a whole lot of research. Did you do a whole lot of film? Did you stay on Broadway? What's the choice?
So you didn't, you don't know nothing about me is what you're
who
saying.
Who are you anyway? What are you?
Not much to know. I did a lot of Broadway. My husband is standing in the, what do you, what? He doesn't like my angle.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We can pick a new one.
What? Like this?
Oh, that's why the thing is in the.
Okay. All right. I don't know.
Okay. Go
ahead. He's my technician. Anyway, I did a lot of Broadway and then I started doing television. I was recurring on Law and Order as the same character for about 10 years. And then I did a bunch of other stuff. I was on Mr. Robot for the final season. I did the television movie about Madoff starring Richard Dreyfuss and I played his mistress, which was thrilling. He's a great actor to work opposite of, very generous.
I was going to ask about that one. Plus you also did the Americans as well, which is a series I loved. You've gotten, really? Your choices were very interesting. I was teasing when I said I didn't look at you. That would be awful. But Mr. Robot and the Americans are two favorites of mine and because they're quirky and all that. So do you pick for these roles? Do you just get what you get? Like, I don't know. I don't know if you were sitting there going, man, I'd really like to be in some quirky shows like with Rami Malek. Or, you know, do you just take what you can get and you're happy for it? Like, how does that work for you?
I think you take what you can get. But in the case of Americans, I was such a big fan and I watched it religiously. I loved it. And I did think, oh my God, please. And that was one that worked out. I thought Mr. Robot was seriously innovative as well. But no, you know, you audition for anything you can and you take what they give you.
Watching both of those, I mean, I'm going to fixate on those. I mean, Law and Order, you know, I get it. You get to say a lot of weird lines about people's bones deteriorating and all that sort of thing. But watching the Americans, you, in your belly, you have that feeling like this could have happened. This probably did happen. This is real. You know, so even just watching it, not you, the actor, you, the person now sitting here watching it on Amazon Prime, like every other weirdo, get that feeling, but you got to be inside that for a bit.
Yeah, it was the two leads, Carrie and what's his name?
And the other guy, the Welsh guy.
The other guy, you know, it was a very intense show and they had to go through a lot together. They were involved at the time. They were getting together at the time. And they were so crazy wacky.
Matthew Reese, by the way. Matthew Reese.
Thank you, Matthew. They were so crazy wacky during breaks because they were going nuts with how serious and demanding the storylines were. And they would play football. As soon as they would yell cut, they would start tossing the football just to clear their heads. They were very sweet.
That's wild stuff. So let's go back to Broadway. So the difference is, you know, in what I know of TV and film, the difference is a real lot of downtime. Suddenly, you know, smashed against a real lot of heavy work that's a lot more strenuous for if you go home and explain to someone you said the same line 76 times, no one would cry you a river. But right. It's a lot of mental work to quick reset your brain, say it as if you've never said this sentence before. Compared to Broadway, what's harder for you? And, you know, if you could totally cherry pick the next couple of years, Liz, what would you pick?
I would pick being on a sitcom because one of the easiest things to do is learn lines and apply yourself when you already know who you are. And with a sitcom, you're one character, you stay that one character, and then your situations change. So that to me is the ultimate not the ultimate artistic endeavor, but a great job. film is weird because there's so much you have to do alone. Because when you get out in front of the cameras, everybody's like, okay, go. The lights, everybody's going, and you've got to deliver exactly perfectly. You've got to have major choices already, know who you are, know what you want, and also be able to hit the mark at the same time you're saying it. So that's a lot of in your head time. And that's challenging in its own way. And also when you audition for film, you have to be done. When you audition for a musical or a play, you can be a work in progress. You know, they want you to be a work in progress. They want you to be right for the role. They want you to be flexible. So you can give them an idea and they can direct you in the audition, but not in film or television. They want you to be that, do it and do your part, get it done. So they can worry about other things. So that's different about also getting these roles. And with theater, it's Olympic. You know, when you're putting a show together, it is all day, every day, and then you go into tech and it's 12 hours a day, and then you open and you're rehearsing and you're brushing up and you're doing the show at night and if you lose your voice, you're done. Or if you pull a muscle, you're done for 6 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever it is. And so someone else has to come in and you have to lay down and watch it all pass and jump back in. So it's theater is, I think, more about taking care of yourself physically so that you stay strong and healthy for doing it 6 days a week.
Interesting. Sort of a, you know, athlete mindset compared Absolutely. To... Interesting. Said it more so an artist. Dave says from up in Canada, he says, with the Broadway background, I would have thought Star Trek is the perfect role, but you know, probably just my nerdy bias. You don't want to get some prosthetics glued onto your face and have to say weird things about
these phases. Yeah, why not? It's a cat.
But this I don't know. I read a bunch about you, but there's certain parts where it just said she was in it. Rocky Horror. What did you?
Oh God, that was so crazy because those fans are so crazy and they know it so well. And we did the exact script that the film was. So they really knew it. And it was in the round. I'm not round. It was in a raked. Not
round. Oh, wow.
It was the audience was in a U shape. Let's go. The audience was in a U shape with the back wall, right? Back wall, and the audience was like this around us, and the stage was long all through the audience. So did that make sense? So anyway, the audience is on top of us.
That's right.
The whole time, and there was a gate, like
a fencing
between us and the audience, because we were, you know, against the fence and stuff, and the audience would try to grab us, you know, and touch us and stuff. So we have to always avoid it. And the audience. Not only did they know the show and they were crazy, but they were also pretty high a lot of the time. I mean, we had our Saturday night shows were at 11:45 on a Saturday night. So I'm sorry, 9:45. So we'd get out of there at midnight and people were crazy. I remember we were doing a New Year's Eve show, which a lot of people didn't show up to, a lot of the cast because
the cast.
Because they were scared that, you know, there would be some kind of danger or some, you know, also it was Midtown, so no one wanted to go there. And so I remember I had, my hair was very short and red, bright red, and it was spiked out. And I remember there was one number where I think it was Sweet Transvestite, and he's coming down and I'm sitting against the fence and I see this hand come down, grab my hair and shake my head and go, see, it's real. Told you it was real. I was like, guys, could you really? All right.
Oh my gosh.
I know, it was very funny to have these crazy people so close to you.
I'm just thinking of the Blues Brothers where they were in that tent, in that cage when they're playing Stand By Your Man 75 times in a row and the beer bottles are getting thrown at them and things like that.
Yeah.
That's intense. I was also told once that Weird Al Yankovic is a huge Rocky Horror fan and that if he's playing in some town and there happens to be even like a children's theater version of Rocky, he'll go to it.
So, wow.
Just random related to nothing. So Elizabeth's a competitive sailor. So she's one of those people that has to like bounce her butt all over a boat in the right places and, you know, keep everything going. Who would have ever thought or would never have thought that acting is equal to athletic, but it makes sense.
Yeah, you got to rest when you're not there.
It's crazy.
Rest your voice, rest your feet, rest your legs, rest your neck, everything.
Thought processes so you can keep blocking time in your head. What's the gem that's in front of you still? What's the, oh my gosh, if I got this, I could put myself out. I'm done. I'm good.
I think it's something that hasn't been written because I've played so many great parts and, you know, Dot and Sunday in the Park and Evita and Annie and Annie Get Your Gun and I all these like incredible roles. But I would love to have something that is specifically suited to myself. That would be the ultimate thing.
Interesting. So somebody who's like, you know, knows your career inside and out, can't, you know, not think of all the ways.
I was doing a musical with David Yazbek, who wrote it. He wrote Band's Visit and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Full Monty. And I was saying, come on, man, give me a good part. Like, don't make me play this wife of this. And he said, you got a problem, kid. You need your own show. You need someone to write your show. I'm like, David. But he was busy, you know, with other people.
He wasn't writing a lot of one-woman shows at this point.
Yeah, not at that point, or ever.
Oh, Liz Larson, it's been such a pleasure. And I'm really glad that you were up, like, walk us through it all. There was so much we had to eat. I was just stumbling because I want to click your little links to make sure people know how to find you and all that. But if you want to jump onto the Instagrams, you can go to Liz the Larson and check out there. And thank you so much for being part of the show. If you can, we do a little panel near the end. So if you can stick around just a little bit more, I'll throw you backstage and we'll bring you back out for the panel. Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you. That was, you know, the things we learn on the show. That's the whole point of the show. Ideas from unusual places. There's so much to do. And there's so, the next one, your brain's going to explode. We have so much to learn today. There's so much. Let me do a couple quick ad reads. I forgot to read about Castos yesterday. So if you think I'm unattractive, and boy am I, you could just listen to me on a podcast and you could just go to castos.com for hosting your own show. But anywhere that there's a podcast platform, there's the Backpack Show with far less visuals. You have to really kind of create a few on your own. Look, right now I'm doing this thing with my hand. You can't even see it. Look, that's what podcasting is, baby. Okay, castos.com is how we got hosted. It's easy. Do you want a .online domain? All the cool kids have one. Go to cbrogan.me/online to get yours for 99 cents. You can have an idea for a business or a website and spend 99 cents starting that process. Use the code Chris in all caps. This show was built on StreamYard. Man, this is a really easy app to use. I don't even need a co-host. Oh, come back, Carrie. cbrogan.me/StreamYard. We'll all be fine. It's going to be fine. I'll be okay. All right. If you're an author, and who isn't really, you can host your site on PubSite. PubSite is a site made for authors by FSB Associates, 25 years in the book publishing business, book promotion business. If you think that these people can't make an awesome site for web authors, I mean for authors, can I read today? No, I just can't. Okay. Robin Cook, Tom Clancy, people. It's $19.99 a month. It is $4.99 to have them make the site for you. Or give me $2,000. I'll give them $4.99. It'll look really good. So pub-site.com. Rob says, wow, fantastic guest. Stick around, Rob. By the way, Rob, I was just thinking about Lucy should watch this episode. A little minor thespian. So many interesting guests. I keep forgetting to ask Chris what mic he uses. This is the Blue Yeti Nano. Go to cbrogan.me/YetiNano to get your own. Now, I think I've sold all the things I'm going to sell. So we had Liz Larson. Now, Liz Lathan, because that's what we do around here. We Liz it up. Hi, people. And you are here live. Nicole, you're unmuted now. Ashibodu. How did I go?
Yes! Woo!
I am kicking butt.
You're winning at life.
And the company name, Hot, not oat because we're Americans, Hot Dokimazo.
You got it. Oh, okay. Round of applause.
So the Doki Doki Literature Club. Oh, sorry. Liz Larson, my coworker on another project, Rob Hatch, wants me to point out that he also played Uncle Fester in a play. And if you look at that picture, that very tiny picture, clearly Uncle Fester. Okay.
Absolutely.
Rob's really smart and fun. Ladies, explain. Hot Doki Mazo, it sounds like a drink I've had. Mm. Can you walk us through what we're doing here? What is this return on emotion? And what on the earth is the secret family reunion? School us.
Where to begin? All right, Nicole.
Okay, so hot is a really fancy word. It means fashionably elegant. And dokimazo is the Greek word that means to test, try, or to see if something is genuine, which is how we approach ideas. And so it doesn't matter if you can say it. We don't care. We actually like when people say that thing, those hot, oh, tot, doki, I don't even know how to say it. It doesn't matter because we cannot be confused with anything else and everybody knows what they're talking about. And so that is us, but it is a verb. It's a way of meeting, sharing, and learning. And that's the base. That's who we became so many years ago. And we have a crazy, amazing community. And we just love life through everything that we do through people. And yeah, we're having a great time.
It kind of just started out with events. And I know you've been on plenty of stages at plenty of events across the world. We kind of got tired of flying out to California, sitting in the back of a dark breakout or keynote session room and doing emails and not being permitted to talk to the other people in the room. We wanted that opportunity of, after you ingest some incredible content, to actually talk to people that didn't have to be a business card swap, sharks and minnows, you look like you're worth money and I want to talk to you, but not you. So Hot Dokimazo originated as almost unconferency with an experience to bring people together to find out what challenges have you solved and can help someone else with, and what challenges are you trying to solve. Put those people together, and there's your breakout sessions. And then it became more magic, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we have to dig into some more magic. So you had this going before there was a big, giant reason to lock everybody in one room for a small amount of time.
We did.
You were doing this in a lot of different formats. And again, yes, I have led lots of events. I've keynoted events. I've given the occasional workshop against my will. I want to know just a little bit about, where did you start making the innovations? Like, how long did you do like traditional boring as hell whiteboard stuff before you started being the cool superheroes that you've become now today?
Well, we both came from a long line of corporate events. So our industry history was doing pixel perfect events that cannot fail. And we're a little bit more fun and experimental. So doing a Dokimazo, an event that actually could fail, and having an entire audience of people come in and know that they're playing with us and it might not work. And maybe we didn't order enough pizza because we didn't believe you'd all show up. It was okay. And so it kind of started from the beginning. The whole name was about doing crazy, innovative things. So it was actually at our second ever event. We do a retrospective at the end to find out what people loved and what people think we should change for next time. For example, one little nugget of our event at a children's museum was that maybe we should have adult-sized furniture next time. Lesson learned. So we did that for the next one. But at that event, someone suggested, we've done two of these now, and after just a day and a half together, we feel like family. So Nicole was like, ooh, and I was like, every family needs a family reunion. And Nicole goes, what if we don't tell them where it is? And thus born the idea of secret family reunion. Nicole?
Oh my gosh, secret family reunion, best thing ever. So it is the world's first secret business trip. And so as we were realizing, just even starting our business and then moving into what secret family reunion and how that came about is, you go to events to network with people. And there's things called networking events. And so you're supposed to be creating these relationships that, you know, with other attendees, and they weren't. And so we were thinking like, well, then let's create an entire event around that conversation that you have in the hallway that makes every event awesome. And that's what you remember. Nobody goes to an event to have a keynote speaker speak at your face so you can sit in the back of the room and check your emails. Sorry, but they don't. And so really people wanted these deep and trusting and lasting relationships, and they weren't getting them. And so we thought, all right, everybody feels like family at our events. That's really cool. But how do we bring that up one more level and do something that the world can see? Because we want them, you know, to show everybody that you can have these kinds of relationships when you meet in a certain kind of way. And that doesn't have to be in a business way. And we're talking about humans interacting with each other. And so we said, okay, let's throw people on a plane that we're going to charter. And so we had them meet in New York at JFK. And all they knew was to pack for 5 days for 65 degree weather, to bring a passport and what date and time to meet. And that was it. And they were, the hype going into this event was insane. People were shaking. They're like, please tell me. Like, there was anxiety, there was fear, but there was excitement and elation. And it was amazing. And we live streamed a big reveal party where we counted down from 10 and we told them that they were going to Tuscany. And they freaked out. People were crying. I mean, you would have thought they won the Super Bowl. Like, they're like, whoa! You know, it was amazing, the emotion of that moment. But that's not even where it began. On the plane, we chartered a plane. And so we had this amazing, we had a rave on the plane. We turned the lights off. People had glow sticks. We had a radio. Like, it was that experience. And that, the art of getting there mattered. And so that bonded them immediately. So now imagine walking it. The event hadn't even started, right? Meaning it was, we were getting there together. And that was the whole point, right? Is getting there together and how special it made our Tuscany experience. And still to this day, we have 70 people that do business with each other, that go to each other's weddings, that are there for each other in the moments, like they're doing business with their friends and their family. And that is what every business aspires to be. People pay billions of dollars to create that. And here it's a ground that can happen organically. And to give somebody that they can't buy that.
And so what happened, we were supposed to be planning our next secret trip, but then 2020 happened. So what we decided to do was go ahead and do our site visits, but we did our site visits virtually, but we don't do site visits like normal people do site visits. We want our friend Jacques to show us around Paris. We want our friend Veronica to show us around Argentina. So we set these up and we did all through 2021 from May until December, just about every Friday, a virtual fam from afar where we set up this, it ended up being like a travel show. Every Friday for an hour, we went to 28 countries in 2020, exploring where we were going to go all through the screen. We view the screen as a portal, not a boundary. Where can we take people this week? And rather than us doing it alone, we invited everyone along with us because we were just testing, trying, and having fun. And it was magical. So what you saw a second ago with the Secret Family Refresh is our next version of the secret trip. We figured as you're coming out of quarantine, maybe you're not quite ready to go somewhere totally secret yet. So we partnered with the Atlantic to create the location, but no one knows what the agenda is going to be or what's going to happen on site. So the whole secret is once you get there, we pick you up at the airport, you don't know anything that's happening until it ends. Now, what you just saw was Convo. That is us taking the virtual experiences that we created in 2020 of taking you out of your guest bedroom where you're probably working right now and taking you to a magical location paired with our idea of peer conversation. So Convo is for, we're saying, maverick marketers and sales rebels who want to get together and bridge that gap between those two, have real-time conversation, and have an adventure together. So we're doing these quarterly experiences. The next one's coming up in April. We'll be going to the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, Turkey, to learn how shopkeepers have kept customers literally for generations coming back to their store amongst the 4,000 stores that exist. And the conversation will be around account-based marketing and targeting the right people.
Would we be also visiting Constantinople?
Or is it Istanbul?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Because if you didn't do that, I might have just had to disconnect you. But it's there. Nicole, you're good, by the way, now. Thank you. There was a wee thing going, but we got it. But she's muted herself. Okay, so I'm buying it a bit and I'm super excited, except I've gone to 8 million fun things. Corporate created fun, court appointed fun, I sometimes call it. It's the worst fun in the world. How did you break through? Like, look, I'm not saying are you or aren't you smart, because obviously I'm going to have to go with you probably are. But how did you make it fun? And how do you make it fun for the world's Oscar the Grouches, the Grumps? How do you make it
fun? Honestly, if we're having fun, people are seeing it happen. And we really don't do unfun things. So that's generally the way that we work. And if we're having a great time, people are going to come along with us. The Oscar the Grouch can go manage Oscar the Grouch themselves. But we're going to have an incredible time wherever we go.
Nice. All right. So then one other question or thought. I threw up really quick your slide of many people that every website has to have, you know. So every website has to say, no, really, grown-ups like us, you know. That's what that slide means. That's some pretty big-ass names. You know, you've got Intel, you've got Dell, you've got the cloud people there, IBM, Google. So that's some pretty big guys. Were you surprised at all these, you know, more or less left-brainy kind of companies being willing to do such a right-brain thing with the both of you?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. That's the history of all of these companies, because we've worked there. I was Dell for 10 years at IBM. Like, we know this environment, and giving them permission to break free, have some fun, and have real conversations is what they want more than anything. The challenge they have is, from a corporate culture, it's difficult to allow that. There's too much risk involved in that. And so when we're able to craft a program that they know going in, they're going to have this experience, and they can blame us, not them, you know, like, we're bringing these crazy people in, they're going to do something and it's going to be a little different. They have something to fall back on. And so that's been the most valuable and most fun experience.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nicole.
I would say that for, and even just to go back to the, how do you, you know, no fake fun, how do you do that? And so where most events or experiences in general add things, we take them away. And so we can, it's not about the decorations. It's not about the food and all of those things. Those things matter, sure, but that's not what creates the experience. And so we bring it down to the most human, basic, and primal needs: to be heard, to have a chance to talk. And so essentially, is what people are getting is permission, even though they don't know to ask for it, and they don't know that we're giving that to them, but permission to do whatever they want to do. Maybe they're usually somebody who's a speaker on stage. Well, we give them permission to be just a normal person and not talk if they don't want to, or to finally hear for the first time, or to be able to say, I've never realized this before. And so, you know, to do that, even we remove title and company, and we only are first name only, because imagine the conversations that you'd be able to have if you didn't know or care who somebody was. And so that starts the conversation off differently. It feels different. You're just Chris. I don't really care where you work, because how did you get here? The allure of getting here, like, this is so cool. And so the last thing that you do is you're like, oh, and where do you work? And at the end, when you finally find out, you're like, oh my gosh, this is a Google, this is a Facebook, and whatever else. Big names don't matter, because they matter. Logos don't matter here. People matter here. First names matter here. And the kind of, you know, thing that that generates is, that's what every human wants. As a company, that's what you pay money to try and create. So for that to happen organically, and that's where you start, is what is changing in once in a lifetime.
But what I want to point out for Chloe, you are right, it sounds terrifying, but the magic of Hot Dokimazo's way is that it is so perfect for introverts and extroverts. You can probably clearly tell Nicole and I are extremely extroverted, but the way that we do our events, especially the in-person experiences, is you immediately get brought in with, if we're allowed to hug, we hug. These days it may be a fist bump or an elbow bump, but we bring you in first name only, and then you are immediately sat at a meal table with no more than six people, because it, and we introduce you. We're like, Chris, oh my gosh, have you met Nicole? Nicole, oh my gosh, have you met Liz? And so we're going to sit you down. So an introvert is not overwhelmed. The natural extrovert at the table will take the lead and draw people out before you dump them into a big event with 100 or however many people. So it starts with that meal, that moment of breaking bread together and being able to have a real human conversation.
I was thinking about body language, and as Chloe was asking that question, it had dawned on me that since you started talking, my left hand has been on the far back part of my chair, as if like, I'm leaving now, because my introvert everything is like, because there's like clearly some good energy here. For this, I have a 90-degree segue. This isn't what I want to talk about. It's my introversion, but hug life, because here we are. And here's, I want to read what it says, because I think people will dig this. I believe in genuinely caring because we rise by lifting others. I believe conversation brings education and enlightenment. I believe co-creation requires co-involvement, diversity, and shared tasks. I believe collaboration yields the most impactful results. That's why that philosopher Rob Van Winkle said you should stop, collaborate, and listen. I believe connection is fundamental to all humanity. So this is Hug Life. How did this start? And slide us into that now.
We call it the five C's, and that is that's the core of Hot Dokimazo methodology. It's like cold fusion. It's free to everyone. You can all do it. We have a specific way of bringing you through the first four C's to bring you to the fifth one of connection. I think the problem with most corporations, events, and experiences is they try to jump you straight to number five and go, we're bringing you here, go connect. And like my daughter will tell you, when I introduce her to other new children, she's just like, I don't know why you think we're just going to become friends. We got to do something together first. And humans, all adults of all ages, sizes, everybody has to go through that as well.
If you don't all slay the dragon, then you can't talk about, remember that time we slayed the dragon.
That's exactly right. And that brings us to the emotion piece, which is one of the big pieces. You know, listening to Liz talk earlier about her experience as an actor, her entire job is to evoke an emotional response from her audience so they will connect with her. That's what we want to make sure we're bringing to business. If you want ROI, you have to evoke an emotional response to drive buyers, customers, prospects to you so that they feel connected, not in a like cheesy advertising way, it makes the shoes more appealing, but in a real life, like I feel connected to that person and I want to do business with them. So you're creating an experience that evokes an emotional response. ROE is real ROI.
Yeah. And that's where we are the experts. Those five C's, that's the methodology that we apply to anything that is not industry specific, not age specific. And that's why it's so revolutionary essentially, and why it applies to everybody. And yes, like it is the hug life and we're hug dealers, you know? And so, you know, we live the hug life. But truly, I mean, if you think about it in your personal or professional relationships, that's what you want. That's what makes life meaningful. And so to be able to have both just really crashes the wall down that you can't. And that's the thing. We'll be like, oh, well, this is my work life. Well, you can't tell anybody that knows Liz or myself, you cannot tell if we're working or if we're not, because we've blurred the line, because we've found this is how you should live and this is how you can get paid for it. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. There are definitely people watching who are thinking, yeah, but not where I work. You know, it's too buttoned up here. Now, I believe that is actually true in some places. There are some places it's just not going to fly. It's just they're lost, but they're also going to vanish off the face of the earth like the little dinosaurs they are. What do you do? Like, what's the qualifications phase? What do you do to make sure that these people know that they're in the right spot for you?
Honestly, we don't push stuff out to people. People come to us. So we are the light. And if you are a moth, you will be attracted to us. If you are a bumblebee, you might go look for flowers elsewhere. So we are hug dealers, but not hug pushers.
Good. And I would say, as far as I would actually disagree with you that this wouldn't work everywhere, because this just speaks to human beings. And that doesn't mean you have to be a type of human being, but I don't know one human, and science and all of the psychology would back this up, that doesn't want to have a relationship with somebody else, meaning even if it's just to be heard, or maybe it's to just listen, but to, you know, to be able to connect with that person on a deeper level, that is something that everybody wants. There is a root to everything, and that's where it is, you know, you could call it love, you could call it other things, but we're applying this really to business. So I would say that the only reason that it wouldn't work for a company is because somebody at the top doesn't want it to, or they're scared. So that does not mean it wouldn't work. That means it would not be allowed to work.
And we've done these experiences for cloud software developers, supply chain management organizations, and of course, event professionals, which may feel like an easier in, right? But it does work for an entire group of introverts, or an entire group of extroverts, or a small group of 12 that are evenly mixed, and they are all over the Myers-Briggs. So,
and I even think it works for those industries that people think it won't. They're like, oh, they're finance people. And I'm like, well, then they need it more than anybody. So the people that think that it won't work for them, or it won't work for a certain kind of people at our company, that's who needs it the most. And if it's allowed to happen there, that's the biggest conversion and transformation is for them. So when people say, oh, he's not going to do that, I'm like, then that's exactly who we want to go and do it for.
This is the perfect time for me to grab Liz Larson back in. and we'll ask a couple of questions amongst the mix of you. I did it. I was like, when I push this button, if I have my way, Liz will be right here. Nicole will move over. It'll all be perfect. So we did it. Magic happened. Liz, I don't think you thought you'd be paired with two people who make corporate fun actually fun. What were you thinking the whole time you were listening to those shenanigans?
Well, it's wonderful what you're doing. I think it's inspired. But, you know, it's funny. You were saying at the end you're going to ask what we would put in our backpack. And I don't know if I'm just going to say it. I would have said tenacity. I've just get up and keep doing it again. But you're making me think that the reason I got up and did it again, no matter who kicked me to the curb, no matter how many times I failed, was because I wanted to get back in that room with those people again, with those artists, writing, singing, working, cooking, walking, talking, cutting, you know, and it was with the people that I was lonely for. And that's what made me get up and love this business so much, because it is all about, you know, this heightened way to get to know each other and to be, I hate this word, a family, but it is. And it's very inspiring what you're saying. And I love it.
Oh,
you need singers though.
So. You're right.
Bring it. I always say we should do things in lyrical dance, but
that's our thing. Yeah, I'm really good at Zoom dancing, so like I can dance from here up, but you have to do
the collaboration is the thing, man. It is the thing. Because so many people are good at this or that or this or that. You put it together and you become enormous.
Isn't that why orchestras are amazing?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Uh-oh, Chris, we can't hear Chris.
You're muted. That's
because as a host, I tend to mute myself a lot. What I least want you to hear is like, this is really exciting. I breathe like an excitable little dog as I'm excited. So.
I love it.
So no, I was just saying the other day, I was just wondering why are orchestras exciting anyway? I know. Collaboration. I was thrown. What do you do? All right. So let's get to the backpack question. You know, Liz was ready. The mark was there and she took it. So here's the question I ask every single guest that's on this show, which is what goes in your backpack? Now, this could be something very specific, like what Liz Larson just said. It could be something physical or it could be metaphorical. Now, every kind of answer is valid here, except for if you put your 7-piece process in here, I'm going to say mean things about you for the rest of your life. So don't do it. Just pick one thing. So I'll go with my non-Liz, Nicole Ashimoto.
Stick on rhinestones.
Stick on rhinestones.
Yes. Because I do it all the time and it elicits everything bigger picture that you need. So I stick them on. If I have a business card, I'll stick them on all my cards, because I guarantee you when people get home and they take their stack of cards, mine's going to the top because it doesn't lay flat. And that's kind of who we are and, you know, what we are. And occasionally I'll just have them in my pocket and just stick them on something because somebody's like, why is that there? And so it makes them think differently, which is the whole entire idea of what we want to do, is to help people think differently. But, and I love to sparkle. So there's that.
Rhinestones. You know, when I try that, it makes my shirt land a different way though. I can help you out.
It's all about the, you know.
She's an expert.
Basement.
Shape.
Boom shakalaka. Yellow card, Brogan. And Brogan is going down like a bag of hammers tonight.
Sorry. Carrie's not here, so I have to yellow card myself. It's very embarrassing. But we have to do it. Dave Davies points out that the quote of the year for 2020, at least, is you're on mute. I'm a non-competitive, very bad video gamer. And that is my team every single game. You know you're on mute, right?
Mm-hmm. I wore that t-shirt yesterday, actually, that says you're on mute. I actually wore it outside of Zoom. And it was
really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because people on the street would see it and know what it meant. Those are my sort of favorite, the inside jokes. Did I ask? Oh, I did not ask Liz Latham. Liz, what goes in your backpack?
Okay, well, Liz Larson says we need more songs, so I'm going to pull from Annie and say, you're never fully dressed without a smile. So that's mine.
Dang, look at the synergy here.
Yeah.
I forgot to do another thing.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
So every episode I have a person of the day, and I totally forgot that. And Dave said that most of them probably should be on mute.
That's a good point.
It's the other side of that coin all of the time. I'm going to give it to Deanna. Deanna runs her own show, by the way. Really fun person, an amazing host. And she added just a new fun thing in her show where she does, she breaks into fitness. There's like a secret exercise minute or so in her shows now. And I'm super into it. I'm here for it. So I thought it was her. So that's it. All right. So as we're walking out the door, I was thinking about how super fun it would be to go to a place like Tuscany and also the first off-Broadway, because look, I was born and raised in Maine. We didn't go to New York. New York was, you might as well have been on the moon at that point. But I was thinking about the fact that my grandmother would have loved to have gone to Tuscany, and that the first off-Broadway thing I had any kind of visibility into happens to be an Italian opera. And the thing that my grandmother thought was true about Italian opera, but she was dead wrong, was that when they get ready to sing certain parts, what you're not supposed to do as an audience member